This is On Location. I'm Tim Leitner. Today's program comes to you from Oregon and California. But first, On Location is produced by the NCA Communications Committee with special production assistance from Joe Mamlin and me. You can find our podcast on iTunes, Anchor, Spotify, Google Podcast, Breaker, iHeartRadio, and Radio Public, among others. So subscribe today on your favorite podcast service and tell all your friends. On today's episode, Veronica Riley of Veronica Riley Training and Consulting in California talks to Tara Rolstad in Lake Oswego, Oregon, about mental health and self-care in the workplace. Tara is a mental health expert, professional speaker, author, and trained advocate with nearly 15 years of experience, who helps organizations break open powerful conversations about mental health. In addition to her speaking engagements, Tara is a consultant and program partner with the National Alliance on Mental Illness and is also the founder and director of Shattering Stigma and Stories, Understanding Mental Health. She is the author of the book OMG, That's Me 3, Bipolar Disorder, Depression, Anxiety, PSD, and Humor. It's going to be a great show, so stick around, and we'll be right back.
Welcome to another episode of the NCIA On Location podcast. I'm Veronica Riley, and I'll be your host today. Our guest is Tara Rolstad. Tara is a mental health expert, professional speaker, author, and trained advocate with nearly 15 years of experience who helps organizations break open powerful conversations about mental health. In addition to her speaking engagements, Tara is a consultant and program partner with NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness, a wonderful organization. And she's also the founder and director of Shattering Stigma with Stories, Understanding Mental Health. And she's a busy lady. She's also author of the book, OMG, That's Me 3, Bipolar Disorder, Depression, Anxiety, PTSD, and Humor. She is here to talk to us today about the importance of mental health, how it relates to us in the workplace, and why taking care of ourselves is so important for us all. Really excited to have you here today. Welcome, Tara.
I am glad to be here, always.
So glad to have you. Thank you. So, big topics, a lot going on here, but can you just give our audience a little bit of your background? If you could just tell us a little bit about yourself, how you came to be in this line of work.
Yeah, absolutely. Not on purpose, that's for sure. I had a long career in nonprofit management, working in program development and other nonprofit-y things. And my husband and I were called to bring some nieces into our home that as foster kids, they'd come out of a background of abuse and they came to us with mental illness. And up until that point, we did not really know anything about mental illness. We had three very young kids at the time and we were absolutely adorably, naively confident that we could completely parent these children without any problem because we were just going to love them. And what we discovered was that love is not enough when it comes to mental health issues. And so over the next several years, in the course of helping to raise the girls and helping them kind of put themselves back together, I learned a tremendous amount about mental health, and mental illness, about what families and individuals who are experiencing mental illness need around them, about how isolating that experience is and how frightening it can be. So I combined what I learned from that journey, and frankly, I'm still learning from that journey today, with my own background and the fact that I'd always loved to speak and communicate and educate and started sharing my message with organizations and with audiences, helping them figure out how do we become organizations or communities that truly support mental health? What does that mean? Why do we do it? How do we get there? That's kind of how it happened.
A lot. So given that I know you do a lot of work with organizations, and that's how I first came to have the privilege of getting to know you and seeing you work through, we had you at the WICSEC, Western Intergovernmental Organization. We had you come and speak to our audiences. And I have to say, you were so well received. People were absolutely blown away by your message. And it really, really resonates with people on a professional level as well as a personal level. So can you tell us a little bit about why is it important to bring in the conversation of mental health into the workplace?
I just thought of this analogy the other day, and I am currently in love with it. I don't know if that ever happens to you, but you know how organizations, well, pretty much every organization's favorite thing to say is that our employees are our most important asset. Right? We all say that. Our employees, our people are our most important asset. It occurred to me the other day that one way to look at this when it comes to mental health is to ask yourself the question, are we treating our printers, our depreciable assets, better than we're treating our people? Because what do we do with printers, right? We take care of them. We have maintenance plans. We regularly check in on them. If the printer gets jammed up, we immediately go in and try to provide the printer the support it needs. And we clear the jam. And I just thought, well, that's exactly the situation that we have. Because oftentimes we say people are our most important asset. But when it comes to mental health, are we truly providing them the support that they need? Or are we giving that lip service? And I know that's kind of harsh, but I think sometimes it's true. And I don't think it's very often intentional. I don't think it's intentional at all, but we just don't know how to support mental health. We don't know why we should be spending time and energy thinking about that sometimes. We don't truly anticipate the costs of ignoring the issue.
And how, right? That's like how to even start the conversation. I think for me personally, and I think a lot of people, is the elephant in the room.
Yes. Yes. I think we get very legitimately hung up on, well, I don't want to say anything illegal. Mm-hmm. I don't want to get in trouble with HR. I'm just trying to manage the weekly meeting, or I'm just trying to move forward on the quarterly goals, and dealing with somebody's mental health issues seems like a huge, impossible, intimidating task. But what I found is that what people really need is just good humans around them. We just need to be good humans to each other. And if you notice somebody is struggling, it's okay to say, hey, it feels like you're struggling. Is there anything you want to share? Is there anything I can do to make things a little bit easier? Obviously, we need our people to do what they need to get done. But we can also, in the same way that we would provide them support if they have a child in the hospital, or if they just lost a family member and there was a death in the family, the same things that we would do for an employee in that situation are the things that we can very simply do for a person who's struggling with their own mental health, or they're struggling with a family member's mental health issues. And this applies to pretty much all of us, because one in five of us, depending on which statistic you pay attention to, is going to struggle with a mental health issue, if not this year, then over the course of our lifetimes. And so what that means is, that if it's one in four, one in five of our team members, but it's also one in four, one in five of all of their family members, and somebody better at math than I am did the calculation for me, and that means 67% of us will either be struggling with our own mental health issue or having an immediate family member this year with a mental health issue. So it's really all of us.
Absolutely. And then we in the child support world deal with our clients, right? Who knows what challenges they're facing.
Absolutely. And I would say just inherently, most of those clients are struggling with their own mental health issues. And the work that you do in the child support community is intense, emotional, difficult work, which raises the likelihood that you're going to struggle with your own mental health issues too. Just stress and anxiety and depression out of continually caring for people who are in difficult situations. Yeah. So it's easy things. I mean, it can be as simple as just regularly checking in with your people in a way that's super intentional and really listening to what they're going through. Being as understanding as possible when it comes to schedule flexibility or needing to work from home because they have a child who's struggling and can't make it to school that day, or providing the same sort of, when we have folks who are out with a loss or a medical concern, or we send them coffee. We provide meals. All of those things that we do for people in a situation, that we're really comfortable with responding to, a sickness or a death or a loss. Those are the same kinds of things we can do for people, particularly who are having a mental health crisis. But even if they're just struggling with mental health.
Yeah, from an organizational perspective, have you seen examples, or I know you work with clients, have you worked with anybody who has done something at a larger scale to bring awareness to mental health and the importance of that mental health and well-being in an organization from like a top-down approach?
There are top-down things that are helpful. I think every organization has an employee assistance program, but not every organization does a good job of talking about exactly how it works. How do I access it? What do I get? And we're all paying for those programs, so we might as well make sure that employees can truly take advantage of them. Making sure that employees know they won't be penalized for needing time to do that is really important. Other programmatic top-down things that can help, there are awareness programs can be helpful. Recognizing Mental Health Awareness Month in May, recognizing suicide prevention awareness in the fall, those can be helpful. Bringing in speakers like myself, having discussion groups with your employees about those issues, having a if it's a larger organization that has like a staff therapist or somebody that they have access to come in and do an informational presentation, those can all be helpful. But I will tell you the thing that I have found to be the most impactful in an organization is when a leader is willing to be open about their own mental health issues. And it doesn't have to be anything big and dramatic, but the difference it makes when a leader calmly says in a staff meeting or in the hallway, "Hey, I'm not going to be available tomorrow afternoon because I've got a therapy appointment." Wow. That is such a small thing that sends such a powerful message to your people. Now, if you don't struggle with mental health issues, I'm not asking you to create any imaginary ones so that you can make this comment, but you can talk about people that you know. You can say, "Oh, my. I was just talking to my neighbor, and their depression is really bad right now. And so I was just kind of listening and being available to them." Just dropping those kinds of comments in conversation as a leader is what changes your culture, honestly. The other things are all important and they're all valuable, and you should do them. But it's how we talk about mental health to each other, with each other, that really signals to your people, "Oh, I can talk about this? Okay. All right. Maybe it's okay to ask if I can, reschedule our meeting for tomorrow because today I'm struggling."
There is so much shame and stigma associated with mental health in this country, and I'm sure across the globe in many other societies, but I'm always struck by that. I feel like it's getting better. Do you feel like we're talking about
I
it more?
do.
Is that a post, is that a a byproduct of the COVID pandemic where we're more open to talk about it? Or what do you think? Is it getting better?
I think we were starting to talk about it better before COVID. I think COVID caused so much mental health trauma and exacerbated so many people's mental health issues that we are realizing we don't really have a choice to not talk about it anymore. That it's just become so much more prevalent. For instance, so many of our kids are struggling far more than ever before that we're realizing not talking about it isn't really an option anymore. But I will say that no matter what audience I present to, whether, and I promise you this happened with WICSEC, no matter what audience I speak to, there will inevitably be people either in the audience during the Q&A session or coming up to me afterwards saying, basically, yeah, lady, this is great, but my manager isn't available for that. My manager doesn't want to hear it. My manager, if I asked for any sort of accommodation or even just flexibility, my manager's gonna penalize me. And I don't know if that's always true, but I can tell you that is how people feel. It's always the feeling that management doesn't understand, they don't care, or they're not willing to act on it. And I think that's actually a relatively straightforward change to make in a culture. I'm not saying it's easy. But when you make it clear from the top down, this is a priority and this is how we treat each other, I think it changes the culture.
Yeah, really good advice for leaders, right? To make sure that we're cognizant of that and that we're setting the table for that. And you know, something I know we did this at my organization during COVID because we had a just a horrific time and you know, everyone was going through a lot, but we had a staff member pass away from COVID and we brought in the EAP therapist. It was free and staff took advantage of it and it was such a powerful thing just to have that person there for people to go talk to. And he was just there anytime they wanted to drop in. They did group sessions for the actual team who experienced the loss. And then we also had him just available another week just for anyone who wanted to drop in at any time confidentially or, you know, could go see him. And people took advantage of it. And I think it made a really big difference. And that makes me think, right? Whenever there's, if you could have that, you know, for any traumatic event that's going on, whether it's a, you know, school shootings, wars, you know, things that are going on in society that people are obviously stressed out about. If we could have that available, make that a little bit more of a public availability. I think your point to that of organization setting that tone from the top down could go a long way.
Yeah, absolutely. And especially if folks see the leadership taking advantage of it too. If they see leadership saying, wow, this is really hard for me, I'm going to go have a chat with that person. I think leaders tend to feel like they have to present this persona of invulnerability. I can't show any weakness because it will diminish me as a leader. And what data has actually found is that leaders who are vulnerable and can be human actually are more respected and inspire deeper fellowship is not a word. What is the right word that I'm looking
It is
for?
today. Fellowship is a word
They
today.
inspire deeper fellowship with their people. Wow. But you get what I'm saying. That
Do.
people are more deeply in, they're more deeply committed to a leader who's willing to be real and vulnerable.
Absolutely. It's a kind of a pivot here, but speaking of being real and vulnerable, stand-up comedy. You have a history in stand-up comedy. Was that a byproduct of what you were dealing with when you were dealing with the kids, or did that
100%, 100%. The years that we spent raising my nieces, particularly my niece that was a teenager at the time, were super chaotic. She was in and out of the psych unit a lot. She spent a lot of time in residential mental health therapy. There were lots of running away, a lot of self-harm, multiple suicide attempts. It was a very intense time period. And at one point, I was trying to work and I was spending some time in training for an organization that was doing some training on mental health. And I was with a colleague who said, you know, you're pretty funny. You should try this stand-up comedy program that we're doing with NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. And they had brought somebody in to train people to take their difficult mental health experiences and turn it into stand-up comedy. And I thought, well, that's the weirdest thing I've ever heard. But okay, let's try that. I was intrigued and I was kind of desperate for an outlet for this stress. And I found it to be the most therapeutic experience. In those years, and I'm not going to say this was a wise choice, but in those years, I never got my own therapy because I was so busy taking care of the girls and my own kids and trying to have a career. I told myself I didn't have time for my own therapy. I will tell you now, that was a terrible idea. That was a terrible choice. However, doing stand-up comedy allowed me to reframe the experiences that we were having and call out the ridiculousness of some of it. We weren't making fun of people with mental illness. We were making fun of hospital emergency rooms. And believe me, there's a lot there to make fun of. We were making fun of the experience of having to have five different therapy appointments in a week or picking up seven different prescriptions a week. And I found that the opportunity to take what had been an awful experience and wield it on stage to make other people laugh, and then without their intent, make other people learn, was so fun. So yeah, I've been doing it ever since. I've been performing for about 15 years, mostly at fundraisers and conferences because my life is not conducive to open mics at 1 a.m. at a bar. But yeah, it's been super fun. Super fun.
I bet. I would love to catch a show sometime. That's pretty awesome. Good way to, good outlet.
Yeah.
So you kind of talked briefly about it. You touched on it in that last answer, but the concept of taking care of ourselves and the self-care terminology is thrown around a lot, right? And you hear that everywhere. But what is it to you, really? What does self-care mean? And for us in a leadership context, you know, for work and all that, what does leadership, excuse me, what does self-care really mean?
That is such a good question because there is no one pat answer. And I think the temptation is to say that there is one pat answer, that there's one simple solution, that everybody should do yoga and drink herbal tea, and that is self-care, right? And that doesn't work for a lot of people. I think herbal tea is gross. I think we have to be so intentional about evaluating for ourselves, what is it that I need? What is it that fills me? What is it that restores me? Because for some of us, it's going to be stamp collecting, or it's going to be running. It's never going to be running for me, ever. That will never be self-care for me, but it is for some people. For me, first of all, it's sleep. Like, if there is a non-negotiable that I have discovered in my life, it is making sure that I get 8.5 to 9.5 hours of sleep a night, period. For some people, I mean, I think for all of us, sleep, nutrition, community, and getting outside, those are the things that we all have to focus on, unfortunately, which is why when I talk about it, I call them the boring four, because everyone's kind of like, ugh, really? Sleep and diet? Yeah, I know. It's lame, but it is really important. But then beyond that, it's, what is it for you? What are those things that you can do that take you completely out of your head, that you can spend an hour knitting or an hour, you know, talking to your hamsters about their deepest fears? I don't know, whatever it is for you that you find deeply joyful, that's what self-care is. And approaching it in that way that's more personal takes a little bit more time, but it's got to be really tailored to your own your own things? Like, what is it for you? What is it that you do that you know, like, okay, when I spend some time doing that, I'm going to feel better afterwards?
Bird song. You mentioned one time I saw you speak and you talked about bird song. Can you tell our, I just found that to be fascinating. Can you share that?
Yeah, they have. So I'm a brain science nerd, like such a nerd. And this was one of my little brain science nerd discoveries. 6 seconds of listening to bird songs will change your brain in that moment. It will lift depression. It will reduce stress. Go outside and listen to the birds for a few seconds. If you have to, play a recording of bird songs. But there are even little things like that that we can put into our day. You know, combine it with a walk outside and boom, you've hit two of them. You're listening to the birds and you're exercising. And just the very physical experience of being outside and looking at trees is actually effective in reducing stress. Our brains are wired to need to be outside for some of the time. And I think that that's why birdsong is so powerful. And many of us can go, I don't know, days, weeks without hearing birds if we don't think about it. So little things like that, that can really make a difference.
It all adds up.
It does. It does. It is. It's a matter of like picking from a menu, right? Because it's picking from a menu of the different things that you know that will be helpful to you and putting together a meal, if we're picking from a menu, putting together a meal of self-care items that together will be impactful in keeping you healthier, keeping you less stressed, less anxious, less depressed. Actually, Veronica, I have a download on self-care that might be really helpful for people, just a way to look at that framework and do a quick self-analysis of what they need to be thinking about and what might be effective for them. Happy to provide that to your audience if they want, and I'll make sure that you have a link for them to get that that you can put in the show notes.
Oh, absolutely. I think people would really enjoy that. Thank you. So if you had to share with our listeners any big takeaways from our time together, or anything that you want to share with our listeners as to what is important about for them to know to walk away with on mental health, around self-care, what would you say?
I would say stop telling yourself that this is optional. It's not optional for you, and it's not optional for your team members. The data is very clear that if we ignore mental health, untreated mental health issues lead to actual physical health issues. Untreated depression leads to heart disease. Untreated depression leads to earlier cognitive decline and dementia. I'm not trying to be scary or overly dramatic. This is just, these are the facts. So if you are a person who has prided yourself on pushing through, gutting it out, stop it. Just stop it. Focus on taking care of yourself. We all deserve that, and we are all worthy of that. And frankly, you're no good to everybody else if you are trying to grit your teeth and bear it and not pay attention to your mental health. So that's one thing. I would encourage people to always feel like they can talk to someone about their mental health or somebody else's mental health. It is okay to ask people how they are doing. It is okay to even ask people if you're worried about them. It's okay to ask them if they're thinking about suicide. That asking people about suicide is not going to make them want to hurt themselves. It is going to make them understand you are a safe person to talk to. And the more we talk about mental health with our team members, with our family members, with our kids, the more we do that, the safer we make it for everybody to get the help that they need. So I think those are my two big takeaways.
They're great. Thank you so much. Thanks, Tara. And you have a book, an audiobook coming out, correct?
Yeah, the book that we published, the very long titled book that you referenced earlier, OMG3, that's me, is a book that talks about the, it tells the stories of six people, including myself and my co-author, who learned to do stand-up comedy about their mental health issues. And each of these people struggle with a different mental health issue. So some of them struggled with bipolar disorder, depression, anxiety, and eating disorder, autism. And it tells their stories of how that changed their experience when they learned to do stand-up comedy. And within the next month or so, spring of 2024, we will have an audiobook version of that available on Amazon. So it's exciting. I'm looking forward to that. It's been really fun for people to read that. And there's, you know, the comedy is in there, the jokes are in there in the printed version. But what we are doing in the audiobook version is we have clips of actual comedy shows in there from each of the comics. So that's super fun. Different for an audiobook, I think.
Oh yeah, I can't wait to listen. I was gonna say read it. I can't wait to listen to that. I actually have the book on my shelf, but I can't wait to listen to that. Thank you. So where can people find you, Tara, if they are interested in learning more about you or possibly engaging you to do keynote or workshop or any work with their organizations?
Yeah, the best place to find more information about me is on my website. So that's tararolstead.com. I also have a weekly newsletter that I send out to people with content on mental health, best practices, kind of the latest, my take on the latest news on mental health or encouragement, ways to change the culture around you in your own team or organization. So you can always sign up for my newsletter. You can find me on LinkedIn. I'm fairly active on LinkedIn, and that's a good place to connect with me. And they can always just reach out and email me. I'm sure I'll make sure you have that contact info and you can put it in the show notes and people can reach out directly.
I will absolutely do that. Well, thank you, Tara, so much for this talk. It's been really informative. I know that it's a hot topic out there and an important topic as leaders in the child support industry that we all need to be aware of for our staff, as well as ourselves and our family members. So we thank you on behalf of NCO On Location Podcast. Thank you, Tara Rolstead, for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Veronica. The work you all do is so important. I need y'all to take care of yourselves.
On Location is available on iTunes, Anchor, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and anywhere you get your podcasts. We have a lot of great episodes on the way, so be sure to subscribe and listen to all of our previous episodes as well. We also appreciate your ratings, your feedback, your comments, and your suggestions. If you'd like to be a guest on the show, please reach out to us on the contact link on our website. On Location is a production of the NCA Communications Committee with special production assistance from Joe Mamlin and me. Thanks again for joining me. I'm Tim Leitner, and this has been On Location.